Welcome to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and I am so excited to bring you this episode. Today, I have a very, very special guest, Dr. Matt Clay from Potomac Family and Sports Chiropractic Center in Sterling, Virginia. Matt helped me recover from my own shoulder injury, and today we're going to talk about my specific injury and shoulder injuries just in general, how training while injured is not out of the question, dry needling, what it is and how it helps with recovery, inner abdominal breathing and how that plays a role in recovery and overall strength, and general shoulder health exercises that you could be doing right now to keep your shoulders strong and healthy. If you've ever had a shoulder injury, this episode is definitely for you. And if you haven't, but you want to maintain healthy, strong shoulders, this is also for you. You can find Matt on Instagram at MatthewClay0 and on YouTube at Potomac Family and Sports Chiropractic Center. Make sure you give him a follow because he is a wealth of information. So sit back, take a listen, and let me know what you think. Hey, Matt.
How's it going?
It's going okay, I hope. How are you? Everybody out there, Matt and I have been trying to do this most of today, actually. Technology's not working in our favor, but hopefully it will this time. And if it doesn't, we'll figure it out and get her done. But thank you for being on the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast with me. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to do all this.
Oh, not a problem. Absolutely. Thanks for having
Absolutely.
Me.
It's great to have you. Why don't you just introduce yourself to everybody and kind of give everybody a little bit of brief history on how we became connected.
Sure. So my name is Matt Clay. I'm a chiropractor in Sterling, Virginia at a practice called Potomac Family and Sports Chiropractic. And we had met when I was at a different practice, but you were referred from a training friend of your personal training friend of yours, because you're dealing with some shoulder issues. And that's when we came to meet.
Yeah. And that's been what, a couple years almost now, right?
That's what I was trying to remember. I don't know if it's been like 2 years or.
Yeah. I don't know if it's been quite 2 years. I don't know, but it's been a good long while. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It has.
For sure. Yeah. So I came to Matt, originally with a shoulder injury, that I had had I was diagnosed with a full thickness tear in the rotator cuff on my left shoulder. And I had been diagnosed with that actually quite a while before I came to you. And I had canceled my rotator surgery literally days before, just because I felt like I could do so much with that arm, considering I had a full thickness tear. I just didn't feel right about going in for the surgery at that time. And so then I ended up on Matt's doorstep. And so I thought, why don't we kind of walk everybody through kind of what we did with my shoulder?
Sure. So, I mean, we evaluated the condition when you came in on the first day and came up with a game plan, things that we could do to obviously prevent you from having to go through the surgery. And a way that we could do it from a more holistic standpoint that, you know, us chiropractors and physical therapists can do. Mm-hmm. But we also wanted to make sure that you stayed active because that's honestly the key to a lot of rehab for any musculoskeletal injury is just to try to stay active, to stay up and moving around regardless of how physical the activity is. But I think a lot of people initially think that rest is going to, you know, solve all their issues. Yeah. And if they rest for a week or 2 weeks, then the pain's going to magically go away.
Yeah.
In some cases it can, but the problem's still going to be there that led to the issues of pain or symptoms that they might have been having.
You know, I think that's such a great point, because so many people that I talk to that get shoulder injuries or any kind of injury, they tweak this or tweak that, they kind of go down the road of complete rest, like don't do anything.
Right.
And I think your point is so well taken that maybe that's not the school of thought anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, who you talk to nowadays and if people are staying up to date with literature and research and stuff like that. They'll definitely advise against resting it and trying to get up and active and using the affected area as soon as possible to, you know, to a certain degree.
Sure.
There's different procedures that we can put in place or implement to get the recovery process started, because that's the most important thing, is just to drive the direction of the tissue that you want to heal.
Oh, absolutely. And
resting
is not only that, but to mention the mental component of being able to be active and still feel like
absolutely.
You're progressing and you can do
right.
Something.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think they thinking, or maybe they got it in their ear from, but yeah, rest is good when you need it. But again, if we're talking about, you know, recovery, healing, from any kind of injury, that's something that we don't really want to have the patient start off on, or even think that they need to rest it to make sure that they heal and recover.
Right, right. And you know, I found when I was going through that, you know, I had you setting me up on one end, and Jordan Syatt was setting me up training wise on the other end. And what we ended up doing on that side of it for me was to find things that I could do
right.
that did not hurt or that were not furthering any kind of damage. And we did this for quite some time. And
yep.
For me, with my shoulder injury, horizontal pulling was a huge thing, a door that we completely blew wide open, because I could do that.
Yeah.
Vertical pulling, maybe not as much. Or pressing or anything like that, at least at the beginning. But horizontal pulling ended up being the meal ticket for me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
so walk everybody through, like, we kind of what you did with me just throughout the course of that shoulder treatment, some exercises, and we went into the whole dry needling world.
Yeah, so. A lot of the stuff that we did initially when we started working with you was addressing some of the prerequisites that you had. And, you know, when I say that, anytime somebody comes in with a shoulder injury, it's not so much just the shoulder that's the problem, but, you know, sometimes there's an issue in the cervical spine. Sometimes there's an issue in the thoracic spine. Sometimes there's an issue in the overall scapula or shoulder girdle itself. Sometimes there's an issue with core or postural stability. So when we started out working together, we were doing a lot of exercises through the FRC system, or functional range conditioning, where you're using a lot of tension to either, you know, generate a range of motion or just sustain isometric. And that was basically what we used to target certain tissues of the shoulder, because again, if you're going off of the research, like, isometrics and eccentrics are the best things that you can do to promote tissue healing, stem cell growth, and ensure that the tissue can heal as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and the first thing that comes to my mind, I think, were shoulder cars,
right? One
that, which I do actually every day. It's part of a warm up now. As a result, and I think have made a lot of strides with those over the past, I don't know, year and a half or whatever. It's super important. I know we've done so many exercises, but I think that was one of the very first ones.
Yeah, that's. That's definitely a good one. I mean, any core exercise is good for anybody, really, just because, you know, for a majority of people, we spend a lot of our time sitting in front of a computer or a desk or traveling to work, and ranges of motion are lost. And anytime somebody comes to me with a shoulder injury, you know, obviously we assess ranges of motion of the shoulder, but the stability factor that goes along with it is missing a lot of times when people do quote unquote like mobility work. Like,
yes,
you want to be flexible, but you also want to have stability to control those excessive ranges of motion that you have, because the shoulder and the hip are the two most mobile joints of the body. And the shoulder in particular is actually one of the most unstable joints of the body. So the doing the cars and some of the other stuff that we had worked on is helps to strengthen up the end ranges. And when you're doing, you know, heavier lifts or more dynamic movements, you know, you need to have that end range stability to ensure that you just limit the probability of injury.
Absolutely. And I think you and I talked a lot about too, about how, that the stabilizing the shoulder just sets your shoulder joint to be in such a, through all the course of all lifts, in such a strong position and a safe position once that's stable back there, and all those stabilizer muscles, everything is getting nice and strong.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We used, you know, we did some of the FRC stuff, and then we also did, some DNS stuff, some dynamic neuromuscular stabilization, and they'll use different kinds of infantile developmental positions to access like certain postural stabilizing muscles. And the, I know you and Lars had posted a picture of you guys doing tummy time together for that one exercise. So that was cool.
Yeah. And we were practicing those quite religiously, actually. And so many of those just both of us actually now incorporate things like that into our warm-ups or in between sets of things, and how they all those things just kind of add up to being more effective with all of our lifts, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think variability is key. And if it comes to, you know, an area like the shoulder, for example, I think, you know, sometimes we just get bogged down with like how much stuff there is out there on social media nowadays. And you're like, oh man, that dude did this crazy exercise or this crazy movement. Like, I got to go try that. And a lot of times, you know, people don't have, again, like the certain prerequisites to do those kinds of movements, albeit they may be able to do it, but it might not be done properly or with the proper stability, proper stabilization. And just without even knowing it, are probably just wearing down structures in and around the shoulder.
Yeah.
So making sure that, you know, you just try out like different things and making sure that it's done to tolerance is key. Like, I just last week just started using like Indian clubs with a lot of my patients nowadays with shoulder injuries. And I love that stuff, and actually getting really good results with them.
Oh, wow. Can you talk a little bit about how that works?
I mean, I've seen a couple of guys use them on like social media, but there's a lot of different swing variations that you can use the Indian clubs with. And it's just, it's, you know, it's a weight that has basically like an off-centered weight system. So to challenge, again, like the end range of certain movements with the shoulder, it's good to use because, you know, if you're using a weight or a kettlebell, for example, like, you know, the center of mass is always going to be in that one position. But if I have you hold on to an Indian club and do, let's say, a car, for example, rotating that Indian club around as you do it is going to be a lot more challenging than if you're using a dumbbell.
Ah.
So just having like that stress on the tissue at these different ranges just helps to basically it creates more muscle awareness, and it starts to create better stability again around those end ranges of motion with the shoulder.
That sounds great, actually.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
You know, one thing you had me do, started having me do, is just some bottoms up things with a kettlebell,
right?
And Jordan ended up programming a bunch of bottoms up things for me as well, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about bottoms up and how that helps your shoulder, because I'll tell you what I find, even with a light kettlebell, I mean, you don't need a lot of weight, but the second you grab that kettlebell, you have to work to stabilize the shoulder, that thing is going to go flopping everywhere.
Right. Yeah. you know, with the with the bottoms up position with the kettlebell, it requires a good amount of grip strength, you know, to be able to hold that. And grip strength is correlated with shoulder stability and shoulder strength. So, you know, sometimes I don't do it in the office. I'd like to, but they have, I don't know the name of the device off the top of my head, but they have these basically like pressure gauges. So you squeeze into it and it gives you a reading of like how much PSI basically you're generating when you squeeze it. And they, you know, again, they've done research on these things and they've showed people who have lower than normal ranges typically have had or have some kind of shoulder issue going on. So doing bottoms up, you know, you don't need to use a lot of weight to do a bottoms up. So you're keeping, you know, the tissue in a relatively safe position when you do, let's say, like a bottoms up carry. Or again, you could just hold it kind of like you would a front rack position and really just squeeze, try to squeeze the life out of that thing and maybe even do like a corkscrew with it in that position. And as long as you're maintaining good grip pressure, you're activating certain what we call like mechanoreceptors and proprioceptive fibers in the shoulder to stabilize that joint. And that's huge when it comes to, again, just rehabbing an injury of the shoulder or the rotator cuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was really, really helpful for me. I know for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go back. You had mentioned, I think we had mentioned kind of in passing the whole dry needling thing.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing for me. And sometimes when I talk to people about dry needling, they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I think they automatically go to acupuncture. and if you could maybe explain what dry needling actually is in kind of in layman's terms, because I know I didn't understand. I still don't really understand it all that much. And then when you would hook up the electric part to it and all that, and how that plays a role with healing.
Sure. So dry needling is still using the same needles that an acupuncturist would use, but the application that we're allowed to use with it is different. So we're not stimulating acupressure meridians or acupressure points in the body to help drive, you know, energy or chi, whatever you believe in, into different systems of the body. But we can stimulate localized effects, segmental effects, and central effects with using the needles. And basically what that means is when we insert the needle, there's certain receptors in the muscle belly and in the tendon. Muscle belly, they're called muscle spindles, and then in the tendon, they're called Golgi tendon organs. And once the needle penetrates a different area of the muscle, it creates a response where the body then sends these different chemicals in there to help repair the tissue, to help increase circulation. It helps to flush out like the different waste materials that can build up in and around scar tissue. And when it comes to healing, basically the first thing that you want to do is minimize inflammation and try to restore range of motion. And dry needling helps to accomplish minimizing inflammation, and it also does help to restore pain-free range of motion, again, as long as you're implementing like the correct exercises to go along with it.
Mm-hmm. It promotes a certain amount of blood flow to that area. I mean, isn't that our big objective, is to just get the blood flow into that area to promote healing?
Yep. So it, again, it creates a response where you get these different influx of cells into the area, and some of these cells just promote either vasodilation or anticoagulation, and that helps to ensure that the blood flow is increased in that area. And the blood flow brings, you know, nutrients, oxygen to the tissue to help the repair process. And I forgot to mention, when we use the stim with it, that also, you know, helps to, again, promote circulation into the area to help with the healing process.
Yeah, I think that piece made such a huge difference for me. And I know, I think I came in pretty regularly, what, twice a week probably?
Yeah, for the shoulder. Yeah, it was twice a week for a little
Yeah.
bit. Yep.
Yeah, and so it's more, so dry needling is one of those things, kind of maybe not a one shot deal, maybe, a couple times, or on a consistent basis, at least for a while, to build up, or is this like it could be a one and done, just depending?
I mean, I've definitely have patients where it has been a one and done, and I've had patients where it's been a little bit longer than that. And it just all depends on the patient. It depends on, what that person's dealing with, how long they've been dealing with the problem. Yeah, there's a lot of factors that go into it. So like diet, for example, how well they, take care of themselves, like what their, nutrient levels are like in their body. So there's a lot
Sure.
of stuff that goes into, how many sessions somebody may need. And it also
Yeah.
depends on, again, like the quality of the tissue in there. Like, is this something that's just been like a chronic repetitive sprain strain thing, or is there in fact a tear, or is it an acute injury? And once we know that
Yeah.
and again get into the assessment, then we can say, based on what we know, like this is the time frame that we're looking at in terms of treatment.
Sure. And do you find that dry needling helps generally speed up a healing process that may have taken a lot longer otherwise?
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember when, 'cause I think I've been doing needling now for about 5 years, and I've been practicing for seven. And when I didn't have it, I was doing basically, I think a lot of people know ART or active release technique. And then I started doing Graston, which is a tool assisted soft tissue technique. And those modalities definitely help people get better and recover from their injuries. But I've just found that needling in particular just really helps to speed up that process. I mean, it all takes time, and you can't speed up the physiology of how things work sometimes, but it
Yeah.
definitely does help the person get back active a lot sooner than just some hands-on manual therapy and even some tool stuff, as long as, again, you're giving them the correct advice from like a corrective exercise standpoint, and then obviously a working out standpoint too, like things to avoid, things to, if you are going to try it out, definitely try to go lightweight, go low rep,
Sure.
and just, listen to what your body's telling you.
Oh, absolutely. The most important part of all of
Right.
this. I'm wondering if what you just said, it makes the difference between like a traditional physical therapist and what you do. Maybe touch on that a little bit, because I think there are some differences. At least I've experienced both. So, yeah, I just curious from your end what you think.
How do you mean in terms of?
The differences between what a physical therapist would potentially do and versus what you do.
Oh, okay. I don't think, it depends on who you go to. I mean, I know I have a lot of friends who are physical therapists who do exactly what I do. I have a lot of chiropractic
Okay.
friends who do exactly what I do. And then I have friends on the opposite end that don't. I think it just depends on, what is your philosophy as a clinician, and like what do you think works? Do you take time to like read the literature and understand again what's going on from a physiological perspective as to what are the best like modalities? Because there's stuff coming out there all the time about new techniques and different ways of treatment and stuff like that. And some of it works, some of it doesn't, but I don't know. I try to give it all a test drive, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, I'm just on to the next thing. But I've definitely felt that needling in particular is definitely, not just helped me grow as a clinician, but also helped my patients just get back there and stay active a lot sooner than before. So
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Hello. I'm raising my hand here. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I swear by it. You know, it's interesting. You t I when I tell people about you, I don't know what to call you exactly because we really don't do chiropractic traditional what people think of when they go to a chiropractor, adjustments and that kind of thing. I think you've done that maybe once, but that's not kind of what we do. So I call you kind of my movement doc because you are. Yeah, seriously, because you are all about movement whether it's the exercise and how to do movement correctly and how to set yourself up and brace and all these things that kind of all work together. And there are very few of you out there, I think, out there in general that have that approach that, you know, I've been to physical therapy too, and I probably had somebody on that other end that you were talking about. Because it was just a matter of giving me some sheets of paper and here are the exercises and go do these kind of. There was no education behind it at all. And so that's what I appreciate about what you've done for me. And I know Lars is appreciative as well, is just how much you take us through this movement-based stuff and how that has helped us just with all of our lifts. And that's what I want everyone to understand, that all of these things that we talk about are not just help you pressing a dumbbell over your head. If you want a stronger deadlift, this will help you. If you want a stronger squat, this is going to help you. If whatever it is, all of this is going to help
you.
Oh
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think like on one of our attempts to connect there, I was talking about certain settings, you know, so people going to see a physical therapist, or people going to an orthopedist and, you know, then they get, a script of, you know, you need to see this guy like 2 times a week for 3 to 4 weeks, and then we'll see if you've gotten any better. And if not, we'll do surgery. And a lot of times, you know, and it's not all the time. So again, it depends on the setting, but a lot of times I get those people that come in afterwards and they're like, you know, I went to this person or that person and they hand me a list of stretches that I could do or exercises that I could do. And it's just like, well, that's not specific to what this person needs, you know? And I was talking about before where as long as you express to the client, the patient, like what's going on and they understand that, that actually helps with how they feel and how they manage their symptoms and pain. So again, you know, look, quoting research, but people that understood their problem had, I think it was like anywhere between like a 50 to 60% reduction in pain when they were working out. But the people that didn't really have a good understanding, like their levels were exactly the same. And then when it comes to just, you know, going into a clinical setting or doing the exercises at home, if you instruct the patient, like what the proper form is, what the proper technique, and at any time, if they have pain, then they know what the regression for that one exercise is. Or if they feel like they've gained the adequate strength for that exercise, they know what the progression is. Those patients doing a home care plan had better outcomes than people in a clinical setting.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And I think the one thing that you just said so important is that people know what the regression is to, like the step down that they, you know, I think that's so important.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely important. That's, you know, sometimes when I get these people that come in, it's kind of upsetting just because, you know, the person that they had seen before was just like, oh yeah, you have a rotator cuff strain. So basically they just told you something you already knew, like, yes, there's something wrong with my shoulder, but you know, how are we going to fix this? How are we going to address it? Like maybe they give you some exercises to do, but sometimes they don't explain like why these exercises are necessary. And again, like I feel that just does a disservice to the patient or the client because, you know, they'll do it because that's, you know, as a science we're programmed to do, like somebody tells us to do something, we'll do it. But if they understand what the exercise is meant to accomplish down the road, a lot of times the outcome measures are just a lot better. And obviously the recovery process is a lot better for those people.
100%, I bet. Yeah. No doubt about it. I wanted to also touch just on one more thing about that I've gotten so much out of, and that is all about breathing that you've taught me, and just how breathing would affect my shoulder joints and what I'm trying to accomplish rehabbing my shoulder or getting stronger with my shoulder, and then just how that transfers across everything. Because I have to tell you and tell everybody out there that learning this stuff about breathing has been a game changer for me. I think I use it all the time, and I think it just gives me, I don't know how to term it. I call it a power center. I just feel like I have a power center to my body now. And I feel like everything is just aligned where it needs to be, ready to do whatever it is I'm doing. But if you could touch on that'd be great.
It's so the way that I teach it is, again, it's through the DNS model, or dynamic neuromuscular stabilization, and they classify it as interabdominal pressure. So a lot of times when we become stressed, or if we're anxious or nervous about something, our respiratory patterns can become dysfunctional. So people, if I'm assessing somebody and I ask them to take a deep breath in, a lot of times they just they puff their chest up and then they shrug their shoulders up, and they're using a lot of secondary respiratory muscles, but not the primary ones. And the way DNS educates us as to what a proper respiratory pattern looks like is you're utilizing the diaphragm, which is this huge, almost like parachute-like structure that sits underneath the rib cage. And then you're also utilizing muscles of your pelvic floor. You're utilizing the internal, external obliques, the transverse abdominis, the deep core, the muscles that help stabilize the spine. And if you're doing that correctly, those are a lot of muscles firing at once, and it helps to ensure that proper alignment's maintained, but also that the body can then kind of go into what it normally knows how to do, and that's just perform proper movement. And there's different cues and stuff like that that we have to use to ensure that that happens. But that method of breathing is definitely something that, a lot of people, when I first teach them how to do it, they're like, "Wow, that's like a core workout." And I'm like, "Well, it should be." Exactly. So the way that we teach that, it's basically, some people might know it as like a belly breath, but you're trying to breathe and basically push your stomach out to, give the appearance of looking like a frat kid after he's partied for too long.
No.
And instead of letting like all that pressure out, you're trying to maintain that pressure up against the abdominal cavity when you exhale, instead of just letting everything sink back down. And so you're performing an eccentric contraction over those muscles, as well as an isometric contraction. So that's why it's so difficult to do initially. But once you practice it more and more, it actually starts to become subconscious in a lot of cases. So, I myself try to do it at least like 6 to 10 times a day, just focusing on that kind of breathing. And it's also like a good meditative tool too. So it helps to, kind of relax and calm you down too at the same time.
It's amazing the difference, and I think where some people go wrong with that is after they take that big breath, they try to suck their stomach in, thinking that's the way to get the support or whatever, and it's actually the
I
opposite.
mean, it's again, it's you're just trying to break poor habits, poor patterns. And for the longest time, we're always told to like brace or bear down to do a particular movement, and maybe in certain situations that's necessary or warranted, but it also creates a lot of compression in the spine, and it doesn't really allow for proper movement. But if we work on somebody's breathing pattern and ask them to move, there's no restriction in their movement. Like, yeah, it might feel like you're working very hard centrally in your core, but the way that your extremities move as a result of that is a lot more efficient. And it just takes time to develop like the muscle awareness, the endurance to perform that kind of breathing, like as you're doing certain movements. But again, it's just, it's more efficient to like our physiology and how we go about like stabilizing certain joints when we're doing different kinds of movement.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's been a difference maker. And you're right, it takes some practice getting used to.
I'm still practicing.
Yeah, look, just like, yeah, absolutely, all the time, mm-hmm. all the time. So I think if you could, we're going to kind of wrap this up a little bit, and maybe if you could give everybody just maybe what are a couple of your just very general shoulder joint health things they could do to help keep their shoulder joints as healthy as possible. Just and very general. I know everyone's cases are very different, but just something in general that people could make note of and maybe put into practice.
I mean, like you had already mentioned, like the CARS are a great exercise.
Which, by the way, stands for controlled articulated rotations.
Controlled articulated rotations. Yep.
Yeah. Look at me.
Learning every day.
Yeah. There you go. That's exactly right. So CARS are great.
So
absolutely.
CARS are good. And carrying heavy shit. So, you know, grab a kettlebell, carry that sucker up and down the gym floor. Doing overhead carries is good. And then I always like getting people to just try to hang, you know, and you can even do like some scapular pull-ups there while you're in that position. That's always helpful. And working on grip strength is good. It's definitely necessary to maintain like a good, healthy shoulder. And then I know people probably aren't going to know what it is, but if we're doing shoulder CARS, I always like to do the scapular CARS too. The one where we had you, you know, shrugging up towards your shoulder, pulling the scapula back towards your spine. So just trying to trying to feel like the different ranges of motion of the scapula, because, you know, people, you know, they'll stretch their shoulders or they'll try to mobilize their T-spine or stretch their neck, but not a lot of stuff is geared towards like just feeling the different ranges of motion of the scapula and maybe figuring out like where you're a little bit inefficient, because that how that scapula moves around the rib cage is very important and vital, and just again overall awareness and also like being able to properly stabilize that shoulder joint.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, scapular mobility, all that. Yeah, for sure. That's been a game changer too. Yeah. Well, look, I appreciate you trying this. I don't know how many times, but this one seemed to work. So I really, really appreciate you taking time and being on here. And I can't wait for everybody to hear this, because you have so much great stuff to share. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hopefully I'm not one of those boring podcasts to listen to.
Not at all. This is a treasure trove of information.
Thanks.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So thank you so much. And I will actually be seeing you next week.
I'll see you then.
All right. Take care, Matt.
Have a good one. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.